All right, let's take a deep dive into a case that really highlights those ethically gray areas lawyers sometimes have to navigate.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
You ready for this one?
Yeah, hit me.
We're looking at AVB.
The classic.
A 1999 New Jersey Supreme Court case about attorney-client confidentiality. And it should make all of us think twice about those conflict waivers we just signed without thinking.
You're so right. This case is like a poster child for how even the tiniest detail, like we're talking about something seemingly insignificant, can turn into this huge ethical mess. It starts with, well, picture this. A husband and wife, let's just call them H and W, going to a law firm, Hill Wallach, for some estate planning.
Okay, pretty standard stuff.
Right. Totally normal. They even sign one of those waivers of conflict of interest form.
Like we all do, yeah.
Exactly. Seems routine, right?
Totally. But then, oh boy, here comes the wrench in the gears. A little clerical error, just a misspelled last name in the firm's system, kicks off this whole chain of ethical complications.
Oh, yeah. Talk about a butterfly effect. See, because of that tiny little misspelling, the firm is totally clueless that there's a conflict brewing right under their noses.
Uh-oh.
H, the husband, is involved in a paternity suit from another woman. And guess what? Hill Wallach, the same firm handling H and W's estate planning, is representing the mother in that paternity case.
No way. The same firm. Representing both sides. What are the odds?
Talk about being caught in the crossfire.
It's mind-blowing.
Sure.
And we're not just talking about some random legal issue here. This directly impacts the estate plan they are drafting for this couple.
Oh, it gets even worse. The court decides, yep, H is the father. So now imagine this. His child, someone W doesn't even know exists, could end up inheriting from her estate. Suddenly that waiver they signed doesn't feel so routine anymore, does it?
Not at all. I mean, if this isn't a textbook definition of a conflict of interest, then what is? I could practically see those lawyers at Hill Wallach starting to sweat at this point.
Oh, absolutely. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place. On one side, you've got RPC 1.6, the rule about keeping client information confidential.
Okay, hold on for a sec.
Yeah.
For those of us who didn't go to law school, what exactly does that mean, RPC 1.6?
Oh, right, sorry. So RPC 1.6 basically means they can't just spill H's secret to W without his... Okay, it's all about attorney-client privilege.
Gotcha, so they can't just blab.
Exactly. But then there's RPC 1.4, which says they can't just let W walk blindly into an estate plan that might not actually be what she wants if she knew the whole truth.
Okay, so RPC 1.4 is all about the lawyer's duty to keep their client informed.
You got it. It's this ethical tug of war between keeping secrets and making sure your client is making informed decisions. Talk about a legal and ethical dilemma.
So they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. It's pretty clear that this whole secret child thing is kind of a big deal and something that could totally change W's decisions about her estate.
Well,
what did the lawyers even do in this situation?
Well, they knew they couldn't just sit on this information. They felt like they had to tell W something, but how much? They went to the courts for guidance.
Makes sense. Get a judge to weigh in on this mess.
Right. So the appellate division initially said, nope, you can't disclose anything to W. Confidentiality reigns supreme, they said. But wait, there's more.
Oh, there's a plot twist. I knew it.
The New Jersey Supreme Court, they stepped in and totally flipped the script. They said, hold on. Hill Wallach can tell W that the child exists, but they can't reveal the child's identity.
Wait, seriously? Why only tell her half the story? Why not just lay it all out there?
That's a great question. And it gets to the heart of why this case is so fascinating. See, the court had to consider all sorts of things. Like, there's this thing called the fraud exception, and then there's the question of what that waiver W signed actually meant.
Okay, hold up. Fraud exception. Are we saying H committed fraud?
Not like criminal fraud, but the court saw H not mentioning the child as a kind of fraud in the context of their estate plan.
So, by leaving out that pretty important detail, H was basically stopping W from making a truly informed decision, which kind of defeats the whole purpose of having an estate plan, right?
Exactly. Plus, the court took a closer look at that waiver W signed, the one we talked about earlier.
You mean the waiver of conflict of interest?
Yep, that's the one. They interpreted it as like implied consent for the firm to share information that was super important to the whole joint representation thing.
So even though the waiver didn't specifically say, hey, we can tell your wife about your other kid, the court was like, well, it kind of implied that they could share crucial info in these situations.
You got it.
Wow. So that little piece of paper that seems so harmless suddenly has some teeth. It really makes you think about how important it is to actually read those things before you sign them.
For sure, it's a big lesson for both lawyers and clients about how important clear and thorough waivers are.
This whole situation just screams the importance of informed consent. both for clients understanding what they're signing and for lawyers understanding what they're obligated to disclose.
Absolutely, and AVB really drives that point home. Those waivers and consent forms aren't just legal mumbo jumbo. They have real consequences, and everybody needs to be aware of them.
And to make things even more interesting, the court didn't stop there. They brought in the big guns, legally speaking. They look at the restatement third of law governing lawyers.
Now, that's interesting. It shows just how seriously they were taking this. It's not just some dusty law school textbook. The restatement gives lawyers a framework for weighing competing interests when they're in an ethical pickle.
So how did they use it in this case?
Well, it helped them balance the harm of revealing H's secret against the harm of keeping it quiet. They had to think about H's right to privacy versus W's right to make informed choices about her estate. That's where things get really tricky.
Yeah, it was a real balancing act. They had to do H's right to privacy on one side, W's right to make informed decisions about her estate on the other, and the court ultimately decided that W's right to know was more important than H's right to keep his secret. Yeah, I can see why they decided that. I mean, we're talking about her estate, her future. It wouldn't be fair for her to be making these big decisions without knowing the whole truth.
Exactly. They decided that W had to know about the child so she could make sure her estate plan really reflected her wishes. But at the same time, they didn't want to completely throw H's privacy out the window or put the child's identity at risk.
Okay, so that explains why they only told W part of the story, telling her about the child but not revealing the specifics. It's like they were walking this tightrope, trying to balance their ethical obligations while protecting everyone involved.
Exactly. And it's a great illustration of how the law isn't always cut and dry. Sometimes there are so many shades of gray. And the court really had to dig into the nuances of the situation to come up with a solution that worked for everyone. It's a lesson every lawyer should keep in mind. Sometimes the answer isn't obvious, and we got to be ready to navigate those gray areas.
This whole case really shows how easily a simple estate planning situation can turn into a tangled web of legal and ethical issues. I bet situations like this happen more than we realize.
Oh, absolutely. Joint representation is pretty common. Think about business deals, family matters, even criminal defense. Anywhere you have multiple clients, there's a chance their interests could clash. And that's when things get really tricky. AVB is a great reminder to think about potential conflicts right from the start.
It really drives home the point that those conflict waivers we talked about aren't just formalities. They actually play a huge role in setting the stage for these messy situations.
Absolutely. AVB is a wake-up call, showing us that those waivers have to be written super carefully, laying out exactly what information might be shared between clients. We got to make sure everyone involved knows what they're agreeing to, plain and simple.
So no more generic one-size-fits-all waivers.
Exactly. Every waiver needs to be tailored to the specific case. And we also have to think about the power dynamics involved. Are both clients equally savvy when it comes to legal stuff? Is there any chance one client might feel pressured to sign something they don't fully understand? These are all things we need to be thinking about.
It sounds like clear communication is key, not just between the lawyer and the client, but between the clients themselves, too.
You said it. Transparency is so important. Everyone needs to be on the same page, understanding the potential problems and making informed choices.
Yeah, one thing that stuck out to me about the court's decision was how much emphasis they put on the idea of materiality. They kept saying that W had to know about H's child because it was a material fact that could seriously change her decisions about her estate plan.
That's a great point. Materiality is a really important concept in this case. It's not enough for information to be interesting or relevant. It has to be something that could reasonably be expected to change the client's mind. In this case, knowing about another potential heir was definitely a game changer for W's estate plan.
So it's not about disclosing every tiny little detail, but focusing on what really matters to the client's decision making.
Exactly. That's where good judgment and really understanding the client's situation comes in. It's about asking, what information is so important that it could change the client's course of action?
And knowing about H's other child definitely fits the bill. It would be impossible for W to make truly informed decisions without that knowledge. That's why the court felt so strongly that Hill Wallach had to tell her, even if it meant bending the rules about confidentiality.
Yeah, and it reinforces the idea that confidentiality, while important, isn't the be-all and end-all. There are times when other duties, like the duty to inform and the duty to prevent harm, outweigh it.
This case really makes you think about how we as lawyers balance all those competing duties. It's a constant juggling act.
For sure. We have to always be assessing our obligations, making decisions based on each specific case, and recognizing that sometimes those decisions are going to be really tough. There's no easy formula.
Like in this case, Even figuring out how much to tell W was a tough call. Why tell her about the child, but not reveal the child's identity? It seems like walking a very fine line.
You're getting at another really important point. And again, the court's reasoning for that partial disclosure was pretty nuanced. They recognized that revealing the child's identity could end up hurting both the child and the mother, and they decided that the potential harm outweighed any benefit W might get from knowing that specific information.
So it sounds like they were going for a compromise, trying to respect W's right to know while also protecting the privacy and well-being of everyone else.
Exactly. They were looking for the least harmful way to do what they felt was ethically right. That kind of careful consideration is super important when you're dealing with ethically complicated situations.
It's also worth pointing out that the court didn't just pull this solution out of thin air. They carefully considered the existing laws and ethical principles, like that New Jersey statute that specifically protects the privacy of children born outside of marriage.
Absolutely. They grounded their decision in solid legal precedent, which gives their ruling more weight and authority. It shows that ethical decision-making should always be based on the existing legal framework.
You know, this case also gets me thinking about the role of technology in all of this. Imagine if that clerk hadn't made that little mistake with the client's name. The firm might have never even realized there was a conflict.
That's a really interesting point. It shows how even the smallest errors can snowball into big problems in the legal world. It's a reminder to have strong systems and processes in place to catch those kinds of oversights.
Exactly. Things like double-checking data entry, having clear procedures for checking for conflicts, and using technology to help flag potential problems early on can make a huge difference.
Technology can be an amazing tool for lawyers, but we can't let it make our ethical decisions for us. Algorithms and databases can't replace good old-fashioned human judgment.
You're right. We can't lose that human element, especially when it comes to ethics. It's about finding the balance between the efficiency and accuracy of technology and the nuanced judgment and ethical considerations that only humans can bring to the table.
And that's why cases like AVB are so valuable. They show us how ethical principles actually play out in real life, offering guidance and insights for other lawyers who might find themselves in similar situations. They remind us that legal ethics isn't just about memorizing a bunch of rules. It's about wrestling with tough questions, balancing competing interests, and ultimately making tough decisions that can have a big impact on our clients and the legal profession as a whole.
It's about understanding the spirit of the law, not just the letter of the law.
Exactly. And I think that's a perfect lead-in to the last part of our deep dive, where we'll talk about some of the bigger implications of AVB and what it means for lawyers today. So as we wrap up our look at AVB, it's obvious that this case isn't just some interesting legal story from back in the day.
Yeah, it really gets you thinking.
It's like a cautionary tale for lawyers now, reminding us that even seemingly simple legal matters can have these hidden ethical dilemmas lurking beneath the surface.
It's like we always have to be on our toes, right? Estate planning, business deals, family law, they might seem straightforward, but AVB shows how easily things can turn into an ethical mess.
Oh, absolutely. And it goes way beyond those areas, too. The principles at play here have implications for pretty much every area of law. Anywhere you have multiple clients who might have different interests, you're walking into a potential ethical minefield.
And those conflict waivers we keep talking about, they take on a whole new level of importance after this case, don't they?
No doubt. AVB shows us that these waivers aren't just some meaningless legal formality. They're critical for setting clear boundaries and expectations, and we have to treat them seriously. Think of them as a guide for navigating the complexities of joint representation.
So what are the key takeaways for lawyers when it comes to waivers after looking at this case?
Well, first off, AVB shows how important it is to draft waivers that are super clear and cover all the bases. We need to think ahead about potential conflicts and explain, in plain English, how information might be shared between clients. The goal is to make sure everyone understands exactly what they're agreeing to.
Sounds like those generic one-size-fits-all waivers are a thing of the past.
Exactly. Each waiver needs to be specific to the case. And we can't forget about the power dynamics involved. Are both clients equally familiar with legal stuff? Could one client feel pressure to sign something they don't fully get? Those are all things we need to consider carefully.
So open communication with clients is key throughout the entire process.
Absolutely. We have to proactively discuss potential conflicts, explain what the waiver means, and answer all our clients' questions. Remember, informed consent isn't just about getting a signature. It's about making sure our clients understand the possible consequences of what they're doing.
This case really emphasizes the importance of client autonomy, doesn't it? The court in AVB kept stressing W's right to make informed choices about her estate. It wasn't just about protecting H's secret, it was about making sure W had the information she needed to do what was best for her.
That's such an important point. As lawyers, we're not just legal technicians, we're advisors and advocates. Our job is to help our clients understand difficult situations, see their options, and make choices that match their goals and values. Sometimes that means having tough conversations, pushing back against a client who wants to keep something secret, or even asking the courts for guidance, like Hill Wallach did in this case.
It takes guts to do that, especially when you're dealing with sensitive information and trying to balance competing duties. But at the end of the day, it's about doing what's right, even when it's tough.
You're absolutely right. And that's why AVB is such an important case for lawyers. It reminds us that ethical practice isn't always easy or clear-cut. We're going to face situations that challenge our judgment and make us question what we thought we knew. The key is to be prepared, to think critically, and to ask for help when we need it.
We don't have to figure everything out on our own. We have resources like ethics hotlines, bar associations, and colleagues we trust who can give us support and advice.
Exactly. Using those resources can be super helpful when we're struggling with ethical dilemmas.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into AVB, what's the one thing our listeners should take away from all of this?
I think the most important lesson is that informed consent is absolutely crucial. Whether you're the lawyer writing the documents or the client signing them, make sure you really understand what you're agreeing to and what the potential consequences might be.
It's all about asking questions, getting clarification, and not being afraid to seek guidance when you need it.
Because, as this case clearly shows, even small oversights or misunderstandings can have ripple effects that reach far beyond the initial situation.
Well said. AVB is a powerful reminder that legal ethics isn't just some abstract idea, it's a set of principles that we have to think about and apply every day. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into AVB and what it means for the legal profession today.